It is time for Kaleidoscope on KDOM. Today we get to talk with Liz Stahl with the University of Minnesota Extension Office. And Liz, you've messing around with the weather today, or this week a little bit, huh?
Well, yeah, you know, we got some moisture, and I know nobody likes to get ice, but hopefully most people have dodged that. But boy, the moisture, we could use the moisture. Of course, we're looking to the planting season here, and if you look at the latest U.S. drought monitor, much of south central Minnesota is at least abnormally dry, and then there's a good section that's in that moderate drought, and even the most extreme part of southwestern Minnesota is under severe drought right now. So, yeah, although, you know, we hate to get a lot of moisture out when we're looking to plant, but you know, planting still is a few weeks away here, at least most likely, and we could use a little soil recharge there because we need moisture too to get things going and get things rolling. So, again, hopefully we don't get it in the ice stage or, I don't think anybody wants that four-letter word snow anymore either. But
no, we'll stay away from that.
I'm okay if we're done with that for this year too.
So how much rain does it take to move you from severe to kind of drought to not drought to good? I mean, is it a half an inch rain, or can you put a number on it?
I cannot tell you the specifics on that either, but if a person ever does get interested, you know, you can check up on that U.S. drought monitor, and they kind of look at, you know, what type of impacts the lack of moisture that we've had. I'd have to take a little deeper dive in to see just how much moisture we need to get. But, we've been down a little bit on our snow amounts this year and so we've had a lot of springs here in the past where we've come in a little dry.
It'd be nice to get enough moisture to kind of get a running start at planting season.
That's right, and of course nobody wants to get it right when we're trying to actually get everything planted,
right.
But if we have some nice conditions to plant into, that can certainly help get us off to a good start.
Well, and good start's one thing, and the end of strategic farming. We're kind of shifting gears as we move into planting season, but the last strategic farming was it last week?
Yeah, that's right. The 25th of March, we had our last strategic farming Let's Talk Crops for the 2026 season. And just to help kick things off for the planting season, we did have Jeff Coulter, he's our extension corn agronomist, and Seth Knave, he's our extension soybean agronomist, on. And, yeah, just basically talking about getting ready for spring. And of course, economics are on a lot of people's minds, and certainly farmers as well. You know, fertilizer prices, they have really shot up. And, you know, there's, of course, all the issues of dealing with the tariff impacts and market changes. But, you know, a lot of those things we can't have a lot of control on. But they did talk about things that we can have an impact on. For example, with corn, one thing Jeff was talking about is, of course, you know, look at your crop rotation. You do get a yield, look at your yield potential. There's a yield penalty if you go corn on corn. You know, typically that second year of corn, we're looking at a 7% yield reduction on average. And then if you are in continuous corn, it's about a 10% yield reduction compared to if you were in a corn-soybean rotation. So that's one thing you can look at. However, on the flip side, we do know with soybeans, the longer you're out of soybeans, that helps yield too. So you kind of got to balance those things out. But that's one thing to look at is your crop rotation and how that impacts yield potential. Also, of course, making sure you're planting when soils are fit. You don't want to push it unless you really have to, because, of course, you can end up with compaction, sidewall compaction. All that can affect how the ability of those roots to access moisture and nutrients, all that can impact yield. And then, of course, your date of planting, that does have an impact on yield potential. Sweet spot to shoot for with corn is around that April 25th to May 12th window on average. So, again, that's a good goal. Also, I talked about seeding rate. If you start out with, like, planting 34,000 to 36,000 seeds per acre, that should end up with a final stand about 32,000 to 34,000 plants per acre. that's really where we're seeing yields optimized. I know people have tried to push it and planting more, but typically we just don't really see a yield benefit to planting at higher populations of that, especially if you're planting under good conditions. So that can also help the bottom line as well. So again, just some different things to look at to help optimize your yield potential, which ultimately helps optimize that economics in the end.
Do those numbers, do those apply to beans too? Or are beans would be a different number for planting to optimize?
Yep. With soybeans, you know, we're looking at about optimal yields, probably targeting about 140,000 here across the southern part of the state. And I know some people had been planting a lot higher populations in the past too, but soybean seed costs, you know, they haven't, you know, well, just like all input costs, they've gone up as well. If you're, you know, look at your experiences with that too, like what works out best for you. But if you've been planting a lot higher, you probably could tweak it down a little bit. Targeting about 140,000 seeds per acre is a good thing across southern Minnesota here. We typically can optimize yield because soybeans, they can really adapt to, stand losses. You can end up with even 75,000, 100,000 plants per acre and still end up with top yields, but you don't want to start out with that. It's nice to give yourself a little wiggle room there. So that's why we kind of say that 140,000
gotcha.
Per acre to start with.
Now, and if people missed the strategic farming, it's on the website, right?
That's right. We've got all those recordings online. The website is just z.umn.edu/strategic farming, just one word. And from that site there, you can just, there's a link on there that takes you to where all the videos are, the video recordings. So, yep, you can get the full lineup of all the different presentations that people have had.
Very good. All right, Liz, let's move on. Big announcement for weed management, huh?
Yeah, not interesting from a weed scientist standpoint, but probably not really that exciting for a farmer. We've officially confirmed resistance to glufosinate. That's the active ingredient in Liberty and water hemp. So what that means, and I know people have been suspecting that for a while, a lot of times it's been probably more application conditions or something going on with the application, but we have officially been able to confirm, we found a case in the state where we have detected resistance, herbicide resistance in water hemp to Liberty. So that means that now every single post-emergent herbicide that we can use on water hemp control, we have detected resistance to that in water hemp populations in the state. Not that every single population has that, but, you know, this means you could potentially have a population at some point that you could stack up all those traits, because we have found in surveys that were done in 2020 and 2021, we did find six-way resistance, so six different modes of action. The only one that was working on the population was glufosinate, or, again, the active ingredient in Liberty. So this is concerning, we found out about that. Devlin Sarangi, he's our extension weed specialist, working with his grad student, and that work was supported by the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council. Tested that population. The farmer was having trouble having control, and so they collected seed from there and grew it out in the greenhouse. And the thing is with this glufosinate resistance right now, it's not like what we call target site resistance. It's not like you can do a DNA analysis on that. You actually have to grow it out in the greenhouse because we're not really sure what the mechanism of resistance is right now. But so they spray like a 1x rate, 3x rate on those weeds that come up. It's the second case here announced in the United States. The first case was earlier this year out of Illinois. So, hey, Minnesota's number two in this situation, but not something we really wanted to have to announce at all. But it just emphasizes that importance that, hey, you know, we've really got to pay attention to what we're doing and making sure we're applying these herbicides in the best way that we can, because herbicide-resistant issues are not going away.
What do you do if it's showing signs of being resistant to six different things? What do you do?
Well, that's the thing. You know, there's So what we tell people, yeah, for tactics to help with weed management, I mean, just cannot overemphasize the importance, because water hemp, that's really our number one weed across so many fields in our state, across the whole North Central region. Using a very strong pre-emergent herbicide program, that's so key in getting started. Do not cut rates. You want to have a good, you know, full labeled rate of that pre-emergent herbicide, lay that good foundation. And then another thing that is huge is making sure that you're not applying to weeds that are too tall. We really, can't overemphasize the importance, and I know this is hard to do, but try not to make those applications when weeds get over 3 inches tall, because once they get taller, they're tougher to control just due to that, because they have more growing points. They can also get shaded out by the crop canopy. They can be exposed to sublethal rates because of that. That all encourages selection for herbicide-resistant weeds, tougher to control weeds. So that's really key, too, just making sure you get into the small weeds. And then, of course, looking at your other application things, like are you using the right gallons per acre, are you using the right adjuvants and additives, like making sure you got ammonium sulfate in there, for example, with Liberty. And also really key, we do need to be looking at other tactics, not just herbicides, to help us manage our weeds. What can we do, making our crop more competitive? Can we plant our soybeans in narrow rows? That's going to help that canopy close sooner. Can we add cover crops into the system to help us with weed management? Cultivation, I see more people doing cultivation, too. Rotary hoe when it's needed if those pre-herbicides don't get enough moisture. Just think about all those different tactics to add in there, just to help us with the situation that we're in.
And stay in front of it. It sounds like pre-emergence and getting them when they're little.
That's right. That is so key, is just getting them when they're little. And we do have some really nice articles about this that we put on the Minnesota Crop News. We're really emphasizing with glufosinate right now because, again, when we had all the glyphosate resistance, that's the active ingredient in Roundup, then a lot of people were switching over to glufosinate. Well, now we're selecting for resistant populations to that, too. So another great tool. We don't want to lose those tools, but so we got to do what we can to make them work as effective as we can, but throw other things in there, too, like these non-herbicide tactics.
Yeah. All right, Liz. And, of course, when you have questions, the place to go is to the website. You guys, you have so much information on there.
That's right. I mean, I know it's not always the easiest to get around on there, but, hey, we've got information on there, a lot of great resources, especially as we're getting ready for the planting season. So our Extension Crops website, that's just z.umn.edu/crops. We do have, for example, our fertility guidelines on there. That's so key because for fertilizer, that's just, this year particular, can be a tremendous expense. So you really look at the latest research, look at those guidelines that we have posted just to help. That can really help, optimizing yields while optimizing your return on investment. Again, all the information about planting, seeding rates, seeding date information and all that, can find that all on our website, plus information about cover crops, tillage, and so forth.
Very good. All right, Liz, anything else we need to mention this morning?
Well, I will put in a plug again. Like you said, the Strategic Farming Let's Talk Crops, those recordings are available online. We will be starting the Strategic Farming Field Notes program probably in May. That's what we do during the season, so that's a little shorter. That's recorded as a podcast, but keep your eyes open for that. Once we get the season rolling, that will be coming out as well. So to help get the information out there to everybody.
Very good. All right, Liz, thank you for talking with us today.
Sounds great. Thank you.
That is Liz Stahl with the University of Minnesota Extension Office, and that will do it for Kaleidoscope this morning on KDOM.